World Health Organization Infection Control Webinar Series. Impact of Hand Hygiene Improvement on Healthcare-Associated Infection. Presented on May 6, 2010 by Professor Lindsay Grayson, University of Melbourne, Australia. World Health Organization, First Global Patient Safety Challenge. Clean care is safer care.
My name is Lindsay Grayson, and welcome to this webinar in which we're talking about the impact of hand hygiene improvement on healthcare-associated infection. I'm Director of Hand Hygiene Australia, and as part of that role, one of the things we have done here in Australia is to look at some of the healthcare-associated infections and the impact of hand hygiene on those. So by way of overview, I plan to cover firstly the background and previous publications regarding this topic, and then look at some of the issues that we are addressing here in Australia regarding outcome measures, both in terms of hand hygiene compliance and Staph aureus bacteremia rates, or SAB rates, and describe a little bit some of the problems and successes that we've had here in Australia regarding measuring healthcare-associated infections as an outcome measure for hand hygiene, and then finally address some issues for the future. So in terms of the published literature regarding impact of hand hygiene promotion, in the last 30 years there have been more than 20 studies demonstrating some effectiveness of hand hygiene in reducing hospital or healthcare-associated infections. This is a table that summarises just a few of these articles, some of the key articles, starting back in 1989, then a study in ICU, then of course a study by Pittet, Didier Pittet in 2000, which we'll talk about a little more, and then a number of other studies, all suggesting that with the introduction of alcohol-based hand rub programs, that there was an associated reduction in infection rates within hospitals. Now, the first of these, as I mentioned, and probably the most notable, is that by led by Didier Pittet, which was published in The Lancet back in 2000, in which it described a system-wide change of intervention with the introduction of alcohol-based hand rubs, education of healthcare workers, monitoring and feedback of their performance in terms of their hand hygiene compliance, reminders in the workplace, in particular posters, administrative support and leadership and culture change throughout the institution. And in that paper, things such as talking walls were described, and this is just one well-known example from Didier's own hospital, reminding healthcare workers and other visitors about the importance of washing their hands and using alcohol-based hand rub. And this is the graph from the Lancet paper describing the change in MRSA rates and other nosocomial infections. And here you can see in the bar graph the over the course of a number of years from the start of the program, the reduction in MRSA attack rates in terms of new cases per 100 admissions. And here with the error bars, you can see the overall nosocomial infections per 100 admissions with a steady decline. And the notable thing about this was that overall there was the incidence of MRSA infections decreased from about 2.2 episodes per 10,000 patient days to approximately 0.9 episodes per 10,000 patient days. There have been other studies, such as this study from Vietnam, in which reductions in surgical site infections in a neurosurgical unit were associated also with the introduction of a hand hygiene program in that hospital, and that the SSI rate reduced by just over half in the intervention ward, with more than half of the number of superficial soft tissue and skin infections eliminated. And then there are these trends from the UK, where obviously there's been a big push to increase the use of alcohol-based hand rub, showing the trends in MRSA from 2005 through 2009. Firstly, in patients who were in for longer than 3 days, and you can see a greater than 50% reduction. Some reduction in short-stay patients, those where cultures were taken just within 2 days of admission, and really then the, compared to the control group where they are not acute admissions and not involved with hospital exposure, and you can see the differences here. So in this study, I guess, it is not definitely related only to alcohol-based hand rub, but rather to the overall culture change program that included the introduction of alcohol-based hand rub at that time. So in Australia, in particular in my hometown of Melbourne, Victoria, we just got a grant to implement a very similar program to that undertaken in Geneva, where we installed an alcohol chlorhexidine hand rub at the foot of every bed and undertook a culture change program. It included many of the similar features to that used in Switzerland. And I guess the idea with this was that clearly Pitet's program had worked in Switzerland, but Australians perhaps don't follow the rules quite as much as the Swiss do. And the question was, in doing this, would implementing a similar program, could we show the same sort of benefits here in Australia? And so we undertook a similar program of talking walls and involvement of staff and encouraging them to develop their own posters and engaging them in the process of using alcohol-based hand rub and being aware of infection rates within their units. And this is just one of the examples of one of our posters. Our alcohol-based hand rub is called Debug, but really it doesn't matter about the product. The main thing is that it contains greater than 70% alcohol, and in our case that was so, plus chlorhexidine. Not all hand rubs obviously include chlorhexidine, but ours does. And there are other promotional activities such as from the infection control nurses here. And we had, being Australia, of course, we like a glass of wine or beer, and we had converted our promotional material and posters into wine labels and gave away bottles of wine, and Debug is part of the award system for good performance in the wards. So to make it sort of fun and enjoyable, but also raise awareness about the importance of the program. So with this, we then assessed, obviously, hand hygiene compliance, which was improved quite steadily, but given the topic of today's discussions, we also looked at disease outcomes, and we measured this in two ways. One was just the total number of clinical isolates of MRSA, and so you can see that here is where we started our program, and we had data back from the previous 2.5 years to show the rates of number of isolates per 100 patient discharges, and we then compared that to after the intervention, the solid triangles here, and you can see that there was a steady reduction in the total number of clinical isolates. In fact, there was a 40% reduction, which amounted over the 3-year period of the study to greater than 1,000 fewer clinical isolates during that time. Similarly, we looked at the more serious end of this hospital-associated infection. We looked at patient episodes of MRSA bacteremia, and here you can see quite a marked variation prior to the intervention, but then a steady stepwise reduction, still some scatter, but a general reduction in MRSA bacteremia rates per 100 patient discharges. And in fact, over the 3-year period of this study, there was a 57% reduction in MRSA bacteremia rates, which amounted to 53 fewer bacteremias during this period in our institution than what we would have predicted if the pre-intervention rate had remained unchanged. And this was published in the Medical Journal of Australia by my colleague Paul Johnson as first author, and the rest of our team. Now, as part of this, we then assessed the cost of this program, not so much about starting the program, but about maintaining the program once it had been started. And we calculated with the nursing costs, cost of alcohol-based hand rub, and the monitoring, that this amounted to approximately $2.50 Australian per patient admission. And so this was roughly two-thirds the price of a Big Mac here in Australia, and very comparable to figures calculated by Pitet and others in Europe, but basically that for about two-thirds the price of a Big Mac per admission, not per day, per admission, that one could roughly reduce the risk of MRSA bacteremia by 50%. And by our calculations, for about every dollar spent on the alcohol-based hand rub culture change program, there was a saving to the hospital of $2 to $3. So $1 spent saved about $2 to $3. So we then were able to convince our local state government that, you know, yes, we'd shown some benefit here in our hospital, but what about other hospitals? And so we developed a pilot program where we rolled out the same culture change program across six other hospitals, four urban hospitals and two rural, larger rural hospitals. And these are the results over the next 2 years, showing improvements in hand hygiene compliance in most places. There was some variation at certain times, but overall, across these six sites, there was a steady improvement, still not at the sort of level we would now expect, but nevertheless, starting from a very low base point, but very standard base point of under 20%. And this was using a hand hygiene compliance assessment tool that we had developed. It was not the Five Moments program at that time. And we saw a highly significant improvement in hand hygiene compliance during this period. And then did the same thing as what we had done in our original study, and that was look at the number of MRSA isolates and bacteremias. And here you can see in these six hospitals, clinical isolates and the top number of clinical isolates, rate of clinical isolates per 100 patient discharges per month. And you can see the 24 months period prior to the intervention, and then the figures subsequent to the intervention with a steady decline in numbers. And similarly with our MRSA bacteremia rates, somewhat of a scatter across the six sites, but then a steady decline in numbers across the next 24 months. And that if you looked at the number of MRSA clinical isolates, the number that it was potentially avoided because of the program, it amounted to about 716 fewer MRSA isolates at the six pilot hospitals than we would have expected if we'd not undertaken the intervention. And this was highly statistically significant for trend. And similarly with the MRSA bacteremias, that we estimated that 65 fewer patients with MRSA bacteremia at the six sites than we would have expected prior to the intervention. And this was also statistically significant. So on the basis of both the study at my hospital and then these six pilot sites, we were able to convince our state government to roll out an identical program across the entire state to all 86 hospitals in the state. Now, Victoria has a population of just under 6 million and has a surface area roughly of Great Britain. So this is a fairly large area. For instance, to drive from Melbourne up to Mildura takes about 7 hours. And obviously a lot of these country hospitals have very few beds, whereas many of the city hospitals have many hundreds or thousands of beds. So there's quite a wide variety in the nature of these hospitals, and the aim was to roll out a statewide hand hygiene culture change program and to undertake a similar sort of analysis where we assessed hand hygiene compliance, but also MRSA isolate and disease rates. So without labouring the point, you can see here that all the different, or many of the larger hospitals, and there was stepwise improvement, as you might expect, in hand hygiene compliance. Interestingly, if we compared the rural hospitals to the urban hospitals, that almost always the rural hospitals did better than the urban hospitals. And the reasons for this are not totally clear, but we believe it's probably because their staff numbers and their staff structure within the hospitals is more stable, and that there's less turnover, and because of that there's less need for constant re-education of staff, and possibly also that there's a greater feedback if someone actually gets MRSA bacteremia, because in a small town you often know who they are, and you have greater awareness and can link that patient's illness to your either good behaviour or bad behaviour, and so there's greater awareness. Nevertheless, the overall compliance increased from a baseline of about 20% to about just over 50% after just 12 months, and this was highly significant. But what was more important was the impact on MRSA bacteremias and isolate numbers. And here is the similar to what we've just seen, the MRSA bacteremias per 100 patient discharges for the whole all the hospitals in the state of Victoria. Once again, you can see quite a lot of static scatter, and if you draw a trend line, it's statistically horizontal. But after the intervention, there was a reduction. Now, it's important to remember that this was measured only 12 months after the introduction, whereas all the other studies were either 24 months or 36 months after the introduction. And so after only 12 months, we had not really expected to see a statistically significant result here. And indeed, we didn't. It didn't quite reach statistical significance, but it was extremely close and was very heartening. But with our MRSA isolates, we did reach statistical significance after only 12 months with a significant reduction in the number of clinical isolates, exactly the same as what we'd seen here at the Austin and also at the six pilot hospitals. So this was really, in our mind, fairly good evidence that the introduction of an alcohol-based hand rub program not only resulted in improvements in hand hygiene compliance, but also resulted in disease reduction rates, with the key hospital-associated infection in our country being MRSA. We subsequently published this paper in 2008 describing both the pilot study and the statewide rollout, and I'd encourage you to have a look at this if you're interested in this further. Now, there are a couple of key lessons that we learned from this program. One was that it was absolutely crucial that the assessors of hand hygiene compliance were validated and that they were all measuring hand hygiene compliance in an identical manner. And of course, this is for anyone who knows now the WHO 5 Moments program, you know that this is a key feature of the WHO program, that there must be standardisation of hand hygiene compliance if you really want to compare the compliance rates with one site to another. Secondly, the use of MRSA isolate data as opposed to bacteremia data, that isolate data was great in that it gave you lots, large numbers and therefore statistical power, but it was the data was easily contaminated with screening results, and in some cases it was very difficult to know whether, for instance, MRSA from a wound was really colonising or whether it was truly infecting the patient. And so it became difficult to validate centrally as to the correlation of this isolate data with true disease. Whereas for MRSA bacteremia, it was very robust. It was easily explained, particularly to politicians. Almost everyone knows that having MRSA in your blood is bad, and was therefore less open to criticisms, or as we would say, nitpicking over whether or not it was a serious infection. Well, everyone knows that MRSA bacteremia is serious, and so it's a good outcome measure for hand hygiene. And our estimates were probably that hand hygiene had an impact of about 60 to 70% on our MRSA bacteremia rates here in Victoria, and that if we were going to undertake a nationwide rollout, that perhaps MRSA bacteremia was a more robust measure across the country, and that it would be more easily validated, and that with the larger size of the whole country and the larger number of hospitals, that the amount of data we would get would not be a problem for MRSA bacteremia. And so we felt that probably MRSA bacteremia rather than MRSA isolates was a more useful nationwide disease or hand hygiene outcome measure. The one issue was that we needed a simpler hand hygiene compliance audit tool. The one we were using in Victoria was complex. It actually had effectively 23 moments rather than just 5 moments, and was hard to teach, and also in particular was hard to teach and validate in small hospitals where often there weren't full-time infection control nurses, and in fact perhaps where even the medical and nursing interest in infection control and their knowledge of infection control principles was not as prominent as it is in the larger city hospitals. So we had an interesting thing occur around this time, which actually assisted our our programs are Deirdre Edmonds and Rhea Mart, two of our key infection control nurses, and that is that we had our health minister visit our hospital one day as part of a promotional exercise to do with alcohol hand rub. And in walking the hospital, she really got a little confused, I think, and informed everyone that anyone who came to the hospital must use alcohol hand rub, meaning that any staff needed to use alcohol hand rub. But in fact, the message was reported that any visitors needed to use alcohol hand rub. And really, although this was sort of seemed a bit strange at the time, it was perfect for what we wanted to do, and that was to be able to openly talk about our problem of MRSA infections and hospital-associated infections and the importance of alcohol-based hand rub. And so because of this, what turned out to become an announcement, we were able to develop these sort of posters which we displayed all around the hospital, including in the lobby of the hospital, and our infection control nurses took up this motto of "Thou shalt seek and destroy" as part of the implementation and open discussion about hospital-associated infections and the use of alcohol-based hand rub. Around the same time, newspapers were able to access some of our early results from hand hygiene and the rates. And of course, rather than telling the good news story, they tended to tell the bad news story. But nevertheless, it became easy to openly discuss this. And so this is the front lobby of my hospital, where we've now installed a hand rub hub, where every, as you can see, as you walk in to go to up to the wards, you're instructed that you should use alcohol hand rub before visiting your relatives. And as you walk out of the lifts on the other side of this booth, is a sign saying, don't take out germs home with you, alcohol rub before you leave the hospital. So it was very much opening the issue up and making it more a discussable item. And perhaps just as to exemplify that, I'll show as an example, this is the part of the Year 9 literacy high school exam. So this is for 14 and 15-year-olds. When my daughter did this exam last year, and one of the first tests for how well you could understand instructions was in fact this discussion about infection control and the importance of doing alcohol-based hand rub. And for many of you who know the WHO 5 moments, how do you alcohol rub your hands, this is almost identical as taken from that. And so there were questions about this, you know, how well the students understood the instructions from this. So this was being openly discussed, the need for alcohol-based hand rub and its importance and how well it worked in preventing infections. So of course around this time along came the WHO program with its 5 moments, and this was much simpler and far more robust, and so we were very keen to adopt the program here in Australia. And there were some issues, I guess, with the 5 moments where we felt there needed to be some clarification of wording, and in fact working with WHO, those words have all been fine-tuned, I think, and many of you will recognise this diagram. And so the WHO program was adopted by the Australian Commission on Safety and Quality in Healthcare, and a new body called Hand Hygiene Australia was funded to roll out the alcohol-based hand rub culture change program across all of Australia, the whole population of 22 million people, all following the WHO model. So this was a national hand hygiene initiative, initially of public hospitals in all states and territories, with 2 key outcome measures. Firstly, hand hygiene compliance, doing 3 audits per year, and then also recording monthly Staph aureus bacteremia rates, so not just MRSA, but methicillin-susceptible Staph aureus bacteremia rates. Subsequently, many of the private hospitals now are also joining the program, and we've also been very grateful for the fact that we've had a very close working relationship and collaboration with New Zealand, who are also wishing to undertake a similar sort of program. And so there's been a lot of sharing of methods and computer programs and methodologies with New Zealand, so that essentially the data produced in New Zealand and that produced in Australia is recorded in an identical way and is therefore very comparable and allows us to benchmark with other countries as well as with other, you know, obviously other countries who are using the Five Moments program. So we developed our own sort of mottos and simplified things so that, you know, hand hygiene before and after every patient contact, where patient contact was touching the patient, their immediate surroundings, or performing any procedures, and adopted the Five Moments program, although perhaps with slightly simplified wording for in Australia. So the Five Moments, which I'm sure you're all well aware of, but before touching the patient, obviously one and four pair with each other, so before touching the patient, four is after touching the patient, two is before a procedure, three was after a procedure or a potential body fluid exposure, and five was after touching the immediate surrounds when you've not touched the patient. Now, once again, as promoted by WHO, the standardisation and validation of hand hygiene compliance assessments was absolutely crucial, and this required both inter-rater reliability. In other words, we established a system of gold standard infection control nurses who we knew assessed hand hygiene compliance in an extremely standard way, and they were used in all the training workshops, and it was against those gold standard nurses and staff that any new assessors were measured. And then within each assessor they had to be intra-rater reliability, so that it all, that together they provided very valid comparable data, because in a nationwide rollout you can imagine that this was likely to get quite highly political, and the crucial thing was that we needed to know that all hand hygiene compliance data was entirely comparable and entirely accurate. So we established a series of workshops, just briefly, where, as I say, it was crucial for national reporting, stated that you could not audit for hand hygiene compliance unless you'd attended one of these two-day workshops. The workshop included obviously education and then a theoretical validation through a written test where you had to score greater than 90%. You then had to watch a DVD that we've prepared through Hand Hygiene Australia on the Five Moments, and you had to undergo a DVD-based test and get greater than 90% consistency. And then you had to be observed assessing at least 100 moments on the wards with usually a one-on-one or one-on-three gold standard assessor with the new assessors, and you had to achieve greater than 90% consistency. And after achieving greater than 90% in all those three tests, you were then considered a gold standard hand hygiene assessor and could submit data to the national program. So as you can imagine, with just under 1,000 hospitals across Australia, all of the infection control nurses at these hospitals are now undergoing these training workshops. We're well over halfway through in terms of training all sites, and with the aim being that very soon all hospitals in Australia will be contributing hand hygiene compliance data. So the way in which we submit this data is can either be manually or on direct online entry, or on very soon we'll be introducing handheld data recording devices where there's no paper involved, you just record the data on the Palm Pilot and then sync the Palm Pilot straight into a central database that collates all the data. This is just one of the standardised forms that was developed, and of course there are others, WHO has their own, but for us this works quite well and produces reports like this with the ward name, the number of moments assessed, the overall compliance, and then the compliance rates according to the number of moments, what sort of healthcare worker it was, whether it was a nursing assistant or a registered nurse, whether it was alcohol-based hand rub, whether no hand hygiene was performed, or whether there was washing involved. And these are just some of the recent Victorian data from about a year ago now, showing a stepwise improvement both in urban and rural sites and then across the whole state. And you can see here the error bars with these huge numbers of moments. Tens of thousands of moments for each audit, the error bars are usually less than plus or minus 1%. Here there's the, we've now undertaken three audits during 2009 and just completed our first audit for 2010. And these are each of the various states and territories de-identified. but then the national figure. And obviously this varies. You can see that in order period one we had 105 hospitals, of which about 86 were from Victoria, so not terribly many from the rest of the country. But steadily across 2009 we increased to 290 hospitals contributing, and for this latest round it's well into the mid 300 hospitals contributing data. So there is some variation with this, and that's reflected in the error bars here, but you can see that the error bars for the national figures are very tight, and that nationally it would appear that for contributing hospitals our current compliance rate is a little above 60% using the Five Moments tool. Obviously not ideal, but still marked improvement compared to prior to the program. This is just the latest audit from December for the whole nation, showing the five moments being recorded. And you can see the sort of numbers we're talking about here. So 35,000, almost 36,000 moments for moment one and moment four. And once again, this shows very similar data to what has been reported by Pitay and others, namely that our healthcare workers in general are about 15 to 20% less compliant with hand hygiene before touching the patient than they are after touching the patient. And presumably this is because this is a self-protective behaviour, and this is an area that we really must improve, particularly moment two, where this is before any procedure, including invasive procedures, such as accessing intravenous devices. If we break this down into healthcare worker types, you can see here allied health workers such as physiotherapists, this is phlebotomy nurses, medical staff, as has often been published previously, are substantially lower than nursing staff, in fact roughly 20% lower than nursing staff. And this is clearly an area where we need to change the way in which we educate medical staff to get them to improve. And you can see that as more hospitals have come online, of course, the hospitals who are just joining the program at the end are really only undertaking their first audit. So initially, at least, it appears to be dragging the figures down. But as more and more hospitals come on board, you'll see these sort of figures standardise. And you can see the in many cases our students are pretty good, but they soon learn to not behave so well, although probably our most effective intervention group has been amongst nursing staff. So that was part one of our outcome measures for the Hand Hygiene Australia program, but the second was this, the establishment of a national system for recording Staph aureus bacteremia. And this has been a challenge, but also extremely interesting. So what we decided to do was to measure Staph aureus bacteremia, or SABs, and to report them either as methicillin-resistant Staph aureus or methicillin-susceptible or sensitive Staph aureus, to also record whether or not the bacteremia, the blood culture, was drawn less than or equal to 48 hours before, after hospital admission, or greater than 48 hours, and then to also tick the box on these four parameters, so that obviously if a patient's blood cultures were drawn at greater than 48 hours after admission and they then became flagged positive, then this was by definition a hospital associated Staph aureus bacteremia. If they were drawn less than 48 hours after admission, well, we would call that community onset, but obviously if they ticked one of these boxes, namely was it associated with the presence of an indwelling medical device, or it had occurred within 30 days of a medical procedure where the bloodstream infection was related to a surgical site, or there had been invasive instrumentation or incision related to the bloodstream infection performed within 48 hours, or the patient was neutropenic, then this suggested that in fact they had been involved in the medical system, and that really these were perhaps not hospital, but they were certainly healthcare-associated Staph aureus bacteremias and were potentially related to some sort of outpatient but hospital activity. So that in the end we're now able to categorise Staph bacteremia according to their methicillin resistance phenotype, the time after admission, and break it down as to whether community-associated or either hospital-associated or at least healthcare-associated, even if it wasn't in hospital. So the initial results for Australian staff data, we have data from 5 out of 8 states and territories. The remainder are to follow, but as I'll explain in a minute, there's some politics and some complexities here. We're aiming to obtain 24 months retrospective data prior to the intervention to provide us with a baseline, much as I showed you on our state program. And that our hope was that by introducing this data recording, this would be viewed, if you like, as a blueprint for a national system of nosocomial infection surveillance. And in fact, as part of that, there's been a lot of discussion and now an agreement that the a lot of the state health funding comes from the federal government, and that the federal government of Australia has made participation in this staph aureus bacteremia assessment made participation in this a enforced, you have to do this if you want to get money from the federal government for your health program. Very soon this will be brought into place starting in the next year or so. Now, here are just our first run of staph bacteremia bloodstream infections per 10,000 occupied bed days. That's number of bed days. And once again, the identified states, there are a few here that weren't contributing at that time, but they have, some of those have now come on board. And you can see that by this graph here, we have, this is hospital-associated methicillin-susceptible bacteria bloodstream infections, and this is MRSA. So you can see that, in fact, contrary to what we initially thought, and that was that perhaps most of the MRSA bacteremias greater than 48 hours, that was the predominant form of staph bacteremia, hospital-associated staph bacteremia. This was a surprise to us because it really shows that, yes, MRSA is a problem, but methicillin-susceptible staph aureus bacteremia associated with hospital care was a greater problem than MRSA. And here you can see the national figures which really validate this. Subsequently, we've gone on and continued to collect data, and here's the most recent data set from last year. And you can see the figures fairly steady here. This one state has been a large contributor for a long time, and that, and many, many more hospitals contributing to state D here. And that's probably the reason for the higher rate, because the data collection is more complete. So having said all this, there are some potential problems with staph aureus bacteremia reporting. Clearly, we were pleased that the government decided to link funding to participation in the program, but the downside to that was that it has made the system highly political. And so that there's now been a lot of, and has brought in a lot of bureaucrats in terms of discussing this. And so there's been a discussion, well, should we use lab data as we have been using, or should we use some sort of coding measure such as ICD-10 codes? It now looks like this will not be used, because as we all know, that often the data recording and labelling of ICD-10 codes is quite inaccurate. So instead we'll be using lab-based data. But if we're going to use lab-based data, which is the best denominator? Is it occupied bed days, or is it patient discharges? And the problem is that various states already, many of the states already have some sort of program, and they tend to vary. The programs I've just, the graphs I've just showed you were using occupied bed days. In a number of other states, they have previously used patient discharges in some of their programs. And so this needs to be sorted out. Probably it doesn't matter too much, because most of our public hospitals are full to 97% or so capacity fairly routinely, and the number of patient discharges is fairly stable. So in a number of key sites in Australia where they've been collecting both, comparing their rates both for occupied bed days and patient discharges, in fact the graphs look almost identical. It's just that they're slightly different on the y-axis there, if you use occupied bed days, because obviously that number is greater. Then of course there's been some argument about what I would call silly details, and where it's really not the main game, but seems to occupy discussion for many hours in some cases. For instance, a pregnant woman comes into hospital and then gives birth. Do you count that as one admission or two admissions? Well, it's one admission, but it's two discharges. How do you reconcile that? How do you count the number of bed days for this? Now, as many of you who are clinicians know, that this is less than 1% of our patients, and really does not influence the figures barely at all. But once you get into this funding issue, people wanted to get all this sort of thing sorted out. And then finally, the system, what we can say though is that despite all these potential hiccups, the system of national Staph aureus bacteremia data is progressing. There have been some delays, but the and there's a sense of political anxiety in some states, but nevertheless it is progressing. And we hope that in the next couple of months there will be agreement on what the final denominator is that we use and exactly how we record the data for those couple of states who have so far not contributed data. So the final thing that I wanted to mention here was something that's fairly close to my heart, and that is that the key thing with hand hygiene and culture change programs is how do you maintain it in the future. And in my mind, this comes down almost entirely to politics, and you need some sort of robust reporting system that everyone can understand. And this is crucial for long-term sustainability. It needs to be, however we report hand hygiene compliance and disease rates, whether it's Staph aureus or other bacteria, it needs to be easily understood by healthcare workers and patients, by politicians and voters. If voters understand this, then politicians will follow. And of course, CEOs of hospitals need to understand it. So eventually hand hygiene needs to become embedded in the hospital's quality reporting and therefore funding matrix. So with this in mind, the issue of whether hand hygiene compliance improvement is a linear relationship to nosocomial disease reduction always enters into the discussion. So in other words, if you say to the average person, well, my hospital has a 70% hand hygiene compliance rate, for many of us healthcare workers, we would feel that was a pretty good overall rate. But to the average patient, they would say, my goodness, what about the other 30%? That's a terrible, you know, you're missing almost a third. Well, that assumes that for every percentage point improvement in hand hygiene compliance, there's a similar reduction in disease rate. But in fact, preliminary evidence at least would suggest that's not the case. And instead, it's something more like this, that as your hand hygiene compliance improves, there's an exponential drop in disease rates, and that there, and then there's a leveling off. So as on this cartoon, one might suggest that in fact, based at least on our data, that there's what I would call a hand hygiene power band. Namely, once you reach, using the five moments tool, a compliance rate of 55% or so, you start to see really significant reductions, at least in staff and particularly MRSA rates. And that so that this is an important message because it says to healthcare workers, at least when you're starting, listen, we understand that you may not be able to get to 100% compliance. You don't need to initially. All you have to do is sort of get to this mark and you'll start to see such marked benefits in terms of disease reduction that will make it easier for you to adopt the culture change of always using alcohol hand rub before and after every patient contact. So with this in mind, we decided to try and introduce a simplified hand hygiene compliance assessment. So of course, for each hospital, they would still continue to get their percentage compliance rates. But we thought we should introduce some sort of scheme that made it easier for patients and for voters to understand how good or bad a hospital was. So here is just one example of a scheme where we figured, well, would anyone buy a washing machine that only had a one-star rating, or would they be more likely to buy a five-star washing machine? Would you stay in a one-star hotel if you could stay in a five-star hotel? Well, why don't we introduce a scheme reflecting the hand hygiene power band idea, which scored hospitals according to a star system that told patients how good that hospital was at hand hygiene. And in fact, this broad system of a star rating for hospitals across Australia has been adopted as one of the things that we aim to do in Australia. As yet, we're just still testing this. Although in Victoria, it has gained more attention, and so hospitals are starting to see these sort of alliances. So, what this does is avoids focus on the exact percentage, It's consistent with the power band idea of disease reduction, and it's very simple. And the aim is, in the discussions with our own state government and then subsequently hopefully with other state governments, is that this, the star rating for each hospital will be displayed at the front of the, in the front hospital, in the lobby of each hospital, just as the other accreditation markets for that hospital. And I guess the importance of this is that if your hospital is only a two-star hospital, then it's really forces the CEO of that hospital to discuss with his infection control team as to how he can improve the star rating of the hospital. So, for instance, in my own hospital, the Austin, depending on the scale you use, and this is just an example, of course, you know, we wouldn't be five stars, but we're about four stars. If you look at the current rating on initial, very early figures for Australia, we might be only three stars, but of course it depends on what the background rating is. So this is just an example of where we'd like to go to in the future to make it simple for people to understand about hand hygiene compliance. And you could imagine something like this with the various hospitals in a state, with them getting a report of their compliance rate, their 95% confidence intervals, and then the star rating for their hospital. And then the advantage of this star system is a bit like low emission vehicles or cars, that, you know, what was considered an environmentally friendly car 5 years ago is now quite different to one these days. And to get a five-star environmental rating these days is much harder than 5 years ago with a motor car, because they've changed the scoring system behind the scenes and raised the bar, if you like. Well, that's the same thing as applied in my state, where initially the aim was that all hospitals had to meet a 55% compliance target, and now the requirement is that they reach well over 60% compliance as an average, or otherwise they have to explain to the government why they've not achieved this. So, in summary, in terms of impact of hand hygiene improvement on healthcare-associated infections, I think there is clear data from numerous sites that improved hand hygiene reduces hospital-associated infections associated, at least with Staph aureus. Issues are a little less clear for other pathogens. In the Geneva study, it suggested for all hospital-acquired infections there was reduction, but in many of the other studies, it has not looked at other pathogens, and certainly we know for VRE and Clostridium difficile, particularly Clostridium difficile, that alcohol-based hand rub is not the ideal for that, and it's probably not going to influence that. But for key pathogens such as Staph aureus, there's overwhelming data, and at least in Australia, the alcohol-based hand rub culture change program, as I've mentioned, has resulted in a greater than 50% reduction in Staph aureus bacteremias, and in my own hospital we've gone from almost 60 bacteremias per year to under 10 in the space of a few years. We know that the hand hygiene compliant programs are cost effective, and as I mentioned, at least here in Australia, for about every $2 saved, we save about $2 for every $1 spent. That Staph aureus bacteremia particularly is a robust outcome measure for hand hygiene effectiveness, and that the establishment and embedding of national hand hygiene programs is time consuming and obviously, let's say, laced with politics, but on the other hand it is worthwhile doing, and that Staph aureus bacteremia is a politically useful outcome measure and also an accurate outcome measure of how good the hospital's infection control program is. We hope that at the establishment of our national system for Staph aureus bacteremia data will provide a potential blueprint for other pathogens. So with that I might stop, except for one further point, and that is I'd like to mention to those of you who live in our region that we are planning a collaborative workshop at the start of June in North Queensland, and the aim of this is that for Australasia, that's Australia and New Zealand and some of our closest neighbours, with people coming from Papua New Guinea and Singapore and Malaysia and other nearby countries, Fiji, We hope to establish a collaborative of other like-minded infection control and infectious disease healthcare workers to share some of our knowledge and information and our Palm Pilots and other direct entry devices, and also just discuss the best way around some of the issues that we're facing. And this will be held on February the 18th and Friday the 18th and Saturday the 19th of June. We have Didier Pittet, Andreas Voss, and Andreas Widmer, just amongst a few coming from Europe, but also you can see here Sally Roberts Dart from New Zealand, Dale Fisher from Singapore, and others from both Malaysia and Papua New Guinea coming, as well as numerous guests from around Australia, including state medical officers, key medical officers, and educational experts as to how we can improve hand hygiene education both for undergraduates and postgraduates and lead to real culture change, which is going to be long-lasting and truly embedded. And with that, we really lead to reductions in hospital-acquired infections. For those of you who are interested perhaps in attending this, here are the contact details. So thank you very much for your attention. Good afternoon.